So we're beginning here on the bottom of Chav Vav Amud Bet. Halukeach Perot Mechavero. The Mishnah says, Oshi Shilach Lo Chavero Perot Umatza Ben Maot. Finds embedded inside of the Perot, he finds money. Then, Arei Elu Shalo. Those belong to him. Imayu Tzrurim Notelu Machriz. If they were wrapped up in some way that has an identifying mark to them or Siman, then he has to announce about them. Remember that, by definition, money has no siman, right? That the Gemara already clarified. So in terms of finding money, the money itself is never has any siman. So it has to always be an external siman that gives you indication of the fact that this money was owned by somebody or somebody left it there. The outside information, the exogenous variables that could give you that are tsrurim, that they're wrapped in a certain way, they're packaged in a certain way, or the fact that they're found in these perot. That should be an indication of the fact that these belong to a particular person. This person just sold you fruits and there's money embedded inside the fruits. Who likely put them inside of there? The person who sold you the fruits, they likely put them in there. So what the Gemara says over here, Amar Reish Lakish, Mishumra Bianai, Loshanu Ela Belokach Min Atagar. That's only true when you're buying from a merchant. Avabalokach Mi Balabayit Chayav Lachzir. On the other, if he buys it from the farmer himself, then he's got to give it back. The idea being that if you buy from the farmer, only one hand has touched this fruit, which is the farmer's hand. If he gives it to you, the only way the money got in there is because it belongs to the farmer. Now then, if it came from a tagar, if it came from a merchant of some sort, a wholesaler, then how do you know how many people touched it before it got here? So it could be the farmer, could be the multiple people, could be the tagar himself. But there's no way to know. And nobody can give you that indication of the fact that there is money inside of here. V'chein tani tana kamid Rav Nachman, lo shanu Ella belokach min atagar. It's only true when you buy it from a wholesaler, from a merchant. If you buy it from the balabait himself, then you gotta give it back because it's obvious that it was in his possession. That's why it got to you, and it's the only person who touched the fruit before it ended up in your hands. And as Rashi notes over here, there are two factors here. One is, Hulakach tvua zu mi'anashim harbe. He bought this from multiple parties. That's one thing. And number two, V'keivan delait behu siman. The second thing is that there is no siman here. Therefore, nitya ashu abalim, which is the second factor you need in order to keep an aveda, is that the balim have no hope of recovery. So why do the balim have no hope of recovery? Because there is no siman. And since it's passed through multiple hands, they don't think there's any chance they're getting this money back in the end. And for that reason, you have both yeush balim, you have no siman, and that's why you're able to keep the money in this instance. Now, Amalei Rav Nachman, v'chi balabait matzot dashen, who says that the balabait himself is the one who was dashet tvua? Dashet tvua is a part of the processing of the tvua. It is the crushing. It is the threshing of the grain itself. But you could say that in any stage of the picking and processing of the fruits, he doesn't do it himself. That means that there could be poalim, workers involved here. And that opens up the same problem now, that even if you buy from a single farmer, how do you know it's the farmer that placed the money in there? It could be any one of his workers that dropped the money in there or placed it in there. And therefore, now you're back to the equivalent of a tagar, of a wholesaler, which is you have no clue who put the money in. And if that's the case, they've already given up hope of recovery. You have no reason to be machriz. Amalei Isme says, erase this from my Mishnah. That it's incorrect. You're right. That makes no sense. Let's erase it. Amalei Lo. Don't erase it, but explain the Mishnah in the following manner. He has his own workers working the process. So even if the money was dropped by the workers are his, meaning that they're his, where he has balut over any monetary ownership they have anyway. So whatever's in there is his by default, either his or it's from his workers who also belong to him. And therefore, there's only one party that's involved in this situation. And therefore, he will assume that the recovery or the recovery of the money will end up being returned to him, and therefore he won't have Ye'ush, because he knows that whoever bought it from him knows he's the only party that touched it beforehand. And if that's the case, the person will return it, and that's the obligation here to return it in this instance. Does what discusses here what the nature of a tagar is. Why is it that the tagar, when you buy from the wholesaler, that you're unable to know who it came from or where it came from? Tosfot over here discusses the issue that if it is where the tagar mixes the fruits, meaning that when you buy from multiple vendors, do you then pool the fruits of all those vendors together? Or do you still, when you buy from the farmers, you're still wholesaling it in the farmer's packaging out to the owners? So that may make a difference in terms of the standing of the tagar here. or whether the gar himself or the buyer himself is responsible to return it. I mean, that might also make a difference. Is it before he mixed the fruits or is it after he mixed the fruits? If it's after he mixed the fruits, then even the tagar himself may have no responsibility to return it because his discovery of the object after the mixing of the fruits means that he no longer has the ability to discern how or how it got into his possession. The other hand, if he finds it before he mixes the fruit, then he might have the same obligation as the buyer or purchaser who bought it from the balabait. Tosfot discusses why the Gemara went to the final buyer rather than to the tagar himself and say, why does the tagar have any responsibility to return it? And that might have to do with how the tagar works. Does he work in a manner where he mixes or where he maintains a certain amount of independence of the different fruits and only gets mixed when it goes to the retail side? So that's a question that will determine where along the path there is no obligation to return it anymore. Okay, next Mishnah. Afa simla haita bichlal kol elu. The simla was included in all of these items. Velama yatzat. So then why was it delineated separately? Lakisha la, to make a hekesh to it. Lomar lecha, to teach you. Mas simla miyuchedet? What's unique about a simla? Sheesh ba simanim. It definitely has a siman because every simla is made in a unique manner by a unique person. Veesh la tovim. And it has claimants. Af kol davar sheesh bo simanim? So too, any object that has a siman, veesh lo tovim and has a claimant, chayav lachriz. Then you have an obligation to announce or to try to return the object to its rightful owner. As Rashi says over here, the reason that this is true is because stam simla yesh ba siman, v'chol simla yesh ba balim tovim ota. Every simla has an owner that wants it back or is a claimant to it because it's man-made. As opposed to objects that are in nature, objects in nature could be hefker, they could live on their own, they could be not domesticated, they could be something that has no owner or no claimant to it. That's not true when you have an object that is man-made. When somebody makes something, then there's obviously a claimant for the object that is made, unless they're mafkir zeladat, meaning unless they intentionally remove it from their possession. So a simla, by definition, since it is man-made, has a claimant. And number two is, since it's man-made, it has a uniqueness to it, and therefore it has simanim that are associated with it, whether it's size, shape, all sorts of things. Again, today, some of this might change in terms of commercial production of clothing, whereby two people could have the same exact piece of clothing, and it's indiscernible because of the fact that it was made on machines, and they look exactly the same. So then there are now features that would be on it that are identifiable. I mean, if it has a stain, has something that would be identifiable, or you write your name in it. But without that today, that might have changed. And that's true in all of these situations that we talk about in Vedot. You have to also look at the cultural and social norms that also make things unique or not unique, or whether someone would announce it, or is it better to leave it, to take it. All of these are factors that are dependent on the times and place. So over here, simla for them is something that is definitely unique, definitely man-made, a claimant, and simanim. That's a key element to this. May bichlal, kolelu. What does it mean that simla was included already? That it was included in all these other items? Amarava bichlal kol avedat achicha. In Pashat Ki Teitze, when it speaks about the obligation to return an aveda, it says there that you have to do this to kol avedat achicha. Anything that your friend loses, you must return. The psukim say in the beginning of Perachah Bet, lo tu'et shor achicha, oed seyo nidachim, vitalamta mehem, hashev tishivem l'achicha. Vim lo karov achicha elecha, velo yida'ato, vasafto el toch beitecha, vayayim echad rosh achicha oto veshevoto lo. V'chein tase lechamoro, v'chein tase lesimlato, v'chein tase lechol aveidat achicha, asher tovad mimenu, umitza'ata, lo tuchal lehitaleim. So then, in that parsha, there are other things that are specified, including shor, se, echamor, and simla. They're all specified separately. So the question is, if I have kol avedat achicha, anything that you lost, then why do I need the specification of other objects, or particular objects? And that's what Amar Rava, lamar li dichtav rachmana, shor, chamor, se, v'simla. And they're spread out amongst the psukim in the parsha of avedah. But all of those items are unnecessary when you say kol avedat achicha. Anything that your friend lost, you have to return. Why do I need specific examples? Sitzrichei, I need each one of them. Dikatav rachmana simla. Had I only had the simla there, avamina, hani mili be'idim, de gufa. That's only true if I have edim to the object itself. V'simanim de gufa, or simanim that are on the object or particular characteristics or traits of this object. Ava chamor, how about a donkey, be'idim de ukaf, v'simanim de ukaf. What about a donkey by where you don't have simanim or edim about the donkey itself, but rather about the saddle or about the mat that is laid on it for carrying loads, meaning that it's the kilim that are attached to the donkey that gives you the identity of the object. How do I know that that works? So that's why I have the chamor. Chamor teaches me not only when you have simanim in the object itself or edim about the object itself, but even if you have simanim or edim about an object that is tightly associated with the object, that's enough to identify the object. Meaning that if I can tell you something about the saddle or something about the load blanket, then that also should give me rights to the donkey itself. So, emaloma hadrinan lei. Maybe you would say you don't give it back in that case. Katav rachman chamor. That's the point of having the word chamor. Dafilu chamor b'simanei haukaf. That's true, even with the simanim of the saddle. Now here, the Gemara is purposely poseach hashnei sipim. It mentions edim and it mentions simanim. Because the Gemara's next question is going to be, are simanim doraita or not? Do simanim work? So, if you learn that simanim work, then all of this is relevant to simanim. If you think that edim work and not simanim, then all of this is relevant to edim, which means that if you have edim about the object itself, or you have edim about the ukaf, but the Gemara here is using both terms to cover both of those possibilities. Shor v'sed dichtav rachmano lamali. What do I need shor and sed for? Shor dafilu de gizat znavo. That is to teach you that even if you shear or cut off the hairs of the tail, that you're responsible to return that to its rightful owner. If you have the animal, and you're going to return the animal, you got to return the animal with the hairs. The assumption here is that you have to cut them at a specific time, meaning that there's a specific time when you cut the hairs before they get too long. You have to take care of that. And when you cut them, you have to save the shearings or the cuttings and give it to the owner. And the same thing with a sheep. If you shear the sheep at the proper time, then the shearings are also returned along with the sheep. So, lichtov rachman ashor. Wait a minute, the Gemara says that seems a little bit extraneous or unnecessary, which is to mention both the shor and the seh. The seh is obvious that the gizot, or the main part of what you want from the sheep, is the shearings. That's something significant. If you tell me for the shor, for the ox, you got to return the tail hairs, then of course, for the sheep, you got to return the wool. So the Gemara says, you don't need both of these. If you have shor that tells me that you're getting the tail hairs, then for sure, when it comes to a sheep, for the shearings, that you're going to get it back. Ella, Amar Rova, and this is something that we saw together in Baba Kama, it's a while ago, Ba'an Daf Nun Dalet, which is, Chamor Debor, the Rabbi Yehuda, V'sed Aveda, the Divir Akol, Kasho. That we have a problem here, which is that, for Rabbi Yehuda believes that when we have the limit of shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim by bor, which is the sheet of the chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says that kelim are chayav in a bor. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says that kelim are chayav in a bor, what does he do with the word chamor? You have shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim. He doesn't need velo kelim because he thinks kelim are chayavim. So what does he do with the word chamor? We don't know. That's one thing. That's from the Gemara of Baba Kama. From over here, sed aveda. The word said that appears by Aveda is extraneous. The Divrei Hakol Kasha. We do not know what to do with this word se. Now, Rashi over here phrases it a little differently. In other places, it sounds like there is no limud, that we don't know what the limud. Over here, Rashi makes it sound like that there is a limud, va'ana lo yadinan. We just don't know what it is. There was some purpose for it. There was some limud from it. But we have no idea what the limud is from the word. It can't be extraneous. Can't be unnecessary. It has to be a limud. We're just unaware of what the limud is. Tosfot over here asks the question of why don't we say that the Gemara uses this term in a number of places, that something that can be learned from a Kal v'chomer, tarach v'kotov la Torah, that sometimes the Torah writes something, even though you could get it from a Kal v'chomer, the Torah writes it. So Tosfot over here tries to suggest that it's not really a Kal v'chomer, but rather it's a derivative of the fact that you cut the hairs of the shor, then the gizot of the seh are not a kal v'chomer, it's just basically the same thing. It's the equivalent case, and therefore it's not a kal v'chomer, it's just too obvious. And if it's too obvious, then you have to find something else to learn from the word seh. Tosfot over here also points out what he points out in the Gemara in Baba Kama, which is that there is one other word that we don't know what to do with, and that's by etnan, zona, and mechir kelev. Over there is a machloket beit shammai and beit hillel, as to what to do with the word vegam over there, according to Beit Hillel. So it says that the Gemara over here is only putting together things that deal with livestock or animals. That's why you have seh and chamor, not the word by etnan zona, which is also, le Beit Hillel is an extraneous word, which we don't know what they learn from that word. So now the Gemara says, ve'ema leglalim hu da'ata. Well, I have something that we can include. It's from the dung. What happens if the animal over that time period produces dung, and then it can be used for fertilizer? Maybe you have to return the dung to its owner. Glalim afkuri mafkir lahu. The glalim, nobody is going to keep that or insist on that. Basically, what Rashi says is the misha tarachbo, that the balim are willing to give up the dung to the person who took care of it as a prize for the fact that they took care of the animal. You can keep the glalim. Or I would have said it the other way around, that you don't force him to keep the glalim around to give them back to the original owner. You can dispose of them. You don't have to keep them because there's no need to return them to the original owner. It says, V'dilma the simanim hu da'ata. Maybe it's coming to teach us that you need simanim. Di bailan, because we have a question, simanim doraita o dirabanan. We don't know whether simanim are dirabanan or doraita, and therefore this could answer our question. Maybe the extraneous word se comes to teach you need simanim. Katav Rachmana se, da'afilu bisimanim mehadrinan. Se comes to teach you that you don't need edut. You don't need testimony in order to return an object. Simanim are sufficient grounds for the return of an object. V'simanim doraita. And therefore you would conclude that the giving of a siman is sufficient evidence even min ha-Torah. Now, I'm going to note this here. Rashi noted it before in the Masechta, but that there's a difference between a siman muvhak and a general siman. A siman muvhak is a particular siman that is so unique and so descriptive and particular that even midoraita, it doesn't matter what you hold about simanim, that's like as if you're giving edut about the object, and even midoraita, you would be allowed to keep it. The example the Gemara gave before was a hole next to a letter in the get. That's just too particular information that is not generic at all. If you just say there's a hole in the get, that's more generic. That's not a siman muvhak. But if I tell you there's a hole right next to this letter, right at that point, that's so specific that it's clear that that siman works, even midoraita. The question is, of more generic simanim, like there's a hole in the get, or other simanim that we've seen until now, do they work, d'oraita or d'rabanan? And the Gemara already discussed that, and the Gemara is going to discuss it at the end today. The Gemara wants to include here, simanim d'oraita, that even these less muvhakim simanim would be sufficient grounds to give it back d'oraita. Amrei, megdiktani luhu tzana, the simanim gabe simla. So our Mishnah says, where do we learn simanim from? From a simla. Just like a simla is unique in the aspect that it has simanim and it has claimants, so too, anything that has simanim and has claimants, the Tan is clear that we learn simanim out of simla. If that's the case, then simanim are not coming out of the word se. If they're not coming out of the word se, then what do we do with se? That's what we don't know. And that's exactly what the Gemara concluded now, is that se, l'kuliyama, we have no idea what the limud is from the word se. All right, now, Tosfot over here asks a very interesting question, and he says, the Gemara in Meruba says that by Geneva, we learn Yeush from Aveda. How do you know that Yeush is important in terms of Aveda? We've now established a number of things, one of which is that a clear threshold or an important pivot point in terms of an Aveda is Yeush, is the fact that the Balim give up hope of recovery. Where do you know that from? Here's the Parshia of Aveda. We just gave you all these limudim from these items, yet not once was there a mention of Yeush, which seems to be a very, very crucial element of Aveda and the requirement to give back an Aveda. Where is that? He goes, Vim tomar v'Aveda gufa minolan. How do you know that an Aveda requires Yeush? So Tosfot does this in a backwards manner, but it's very interesting what he's doing. He says, we learn it from here. What he says is, why is a simla important? Because a simla has simanim. Why are simanim important? Because simanim guarantee the ability of a person to get recovery of the object. So then they convince through their claims that they can get it back from the person who's holding it versus other claimants who don't have those simanim. Afilu is simanim lav doraita. Even if you believe that simanim are not min haTorah, v'im achzirim ele beidim, and you only return it with edim, mikol makom yofina misimla, the dafka yidavar sheyesh bo siman chayav dachzir. That only something that has a siman in it, do you have to give it back. Even if you believe that simanim are not doraita, siman is crucial, not because of the siman itself, but because of the ba'alim's yeush over the object. The only way that you have to return it is if the Balim have hope that you will return it. How do they have hope? Because there's a siman. even if you believe some nim are not doraita, that siman gives them the hope that edim can identify it, or somebody can give identifying character traits of this object in order to get its return. Say yidei shebis siman, you might say edim, sheomar lahem makirim atem simla shelihu, shayyahu besimanim kach v'kach. And so too, the person who finds it isn't just going to stomp show it to anybody. He'll only show it to people who can give him some identifying character traits of the item. So Tosfot over here takes what is written about the Simla, about Simanim, and lifts it into a totally different area. Independent of Simanim Doraita, Lav Doraita, he says Simanim are crucial. And Simla teaches you that because Simanim are the trait that gives you the knowledge that there's no Yeush. And without Simanim, there is Yeush, and that's what teaches us this din, which is so crucial or so pivotal in Aveda, that with Yeush, there's over, and there's no Hashavat Aveda. When there's no Yeush, there's an obligation to return the object, the Aveda that's there. Gemara continues now. Tarabanan, Asher Tovad Mimenu, Prat Laveda Shein Bashave Pruta. Now, what's interesting here is that the Gemara is going out of its way to tell you don't have to return something that's under a Shave Pruta. The truth is that should be obvious, because less than a Shave Pruta, people are mochel on, and therefore there should be no obligation even to return something that is under a Shave Pruta, just like there's no din of gzela. Meaning anything to do with monetary issues under a Pruta is considered to be insignificant or not meaningful. And so then why should there be any obligation of a Shavat Aveda? The answer might be because of the way that the pasuk is phrased. It says, kol avedat achicha. The word kol seems to include or be inclusive to mean anything, even below a pruta. So that's why the Gemara might have to go out of its way here to propose a counter to that, which is, don't give it back. If it's less than a pruta, it's not shayach in hashavat aveda. So it says, asher tovad prat aveda shein bashavu pruta. It's something that is called an aveda. That's what the Rashi says. I mean, that it doesn't have a status of an aveda till it crosses the threshold of a pruta. Again, it's so insignificant that a person will not consider it an aveda until it's over the threshold of a pruta. Rabbi Yehuda omer umitzaata, that you found it. Prat aveda shein bo shave pruta. Again, the same thing. It's only considered to be found if you found something that is of significant value, meaning more than a shave pruta. Ma benayu. What's the nafkamina between these two limudim? Am rabbi. Mashmaut doshim ikabanayu. There is no difference between them. It's simply where they learn it from. They learn it. One person learns it from Asher Tovad Mimeno, the other one in Mutzata, they're the same pasuk. That's how they learn it, but there is no halachic nafkamina between them. No normative difference between them. Mar nafkale me'asher tovad, mar nafkale umimitzata. Uleman de nafkale me'asher tovad mimeno. According to the one who learns it from there, hayu mitzata may avile. So what does he do with the other word? Hayu mi bayile, look at the rabbi nai. Dama rabbi nai. This is again from the Gemara in Baba Kama. Gemara in Baba Kama wants to know, how do you know that there's no requirement to return an aveda to a goy? It says there, l'chol avedat achicha. So there's only a requirement to return an aveda to achicha, your brother. Your brother means someone who's in the club. So you only have a requirement to return the aveda to someone's in the club. The Gemara there asks, how do you know that's the case? Maybe you have no obligation to pick up a lost object and return it to a goy. But once it's in your hand, then you would have to give it back, whether it's a goy or not a goy. I mean, you don't have the obligation to engage with the aveda when it's a goy. But with a Jew, you'd be obligated to engage the aveda. But once you've already engaged in the aveda, maybe you have to return it to everyone. The Gemara over there says, and this is what Rabbi Anai is saying, umitza'ata da'ata liyadei mashma. When it says you found it, it sounds like you are in possession of the object already. The pasuk says that you have to return that which you have found. And over there, the word achicha modifies umitza'ata. And that means that you found it, it's already in your possession, yet it's still modified by achicha, which means that you only have to return it, even when it's in your possession, when it's achicha. It's not your achicha, then you don't have to return it. And again, I always quote the Smag, who says that, forgetting about the issues of Eva, there's issues of Kiddush Hashem, that when you return an aveda to a goy, that people look upon the Jew and say, this is the way they conduct themselves, this is the way a Jew is virtuous in this manner. We want to be like them. We understand when a Mashiach comes and Hashem redeems the Jews, we understand why he picked the Jews, because of the way they behave. And so therefore, there's reasons to return the aveda to the goy, irrespective of the eva aspect. Uleman, denafkalei mitzata, hayashe tovad mimenu mayavidei. What does he do with that pasuk? Mi bayileg the Rabbi Yochanan, which we saw back on Daf Chof Bet. This is equivalent of zuto shayam, shaluto shalnar. How do you know that when it's washed away into places where it's irrecoverable in a sense, meaning that nobody's going to get it, How do you know that there's automatic yeush in that case? Shneamar, kein taseh l'chol avedat achidcha asher tovad mimenu. That this is what you do for any of the avedot of your friend, asher tovad mimenu, that are lost from him. Umitza'ata. And then it was found. Misha avudah hemenu umutziyad sel kol adam. That's true of something that's lost from him, but others can find it, or others are in possession of it. Yatztazu shavudah hemenu veinu mutziyad sel kol adam. This is something that's lost to everyone. There is nobody in possession of it now. There's nobody's going to find it. It's in the ocean. The tide of the ocean has washed it away. The overflowing river has washed it away. It's not anybody's possession. Yes, later on, somebody might eventually come into possession of it. But at that moment, it's lost to everyone. And when it's lost to everyone, that's not considered to be an aveda. An aveda is when it's lost to you, but there are others who can be in possession of it or can recover it. So now, the idach, had Rabbi Nai min Aile. So then the other one, what does he do to learn out that limud of Rabbi Nai, which you learn out from mitza'ata, that it's in your hand? Nafkale mi umitza'ata, which is that there's an extra vav there. So the umitza'ata teaches you that it's already in his hand. So you can learn out both. The mitza'ata means that it has to be a shavet pruta, plus umitza'ata means that it's already in your possession. Vida had Rabbi Yochanan min Aile. How does he learn that out? Nafkale mi menu. It says asher tovad mi menu. So he learns it out of the word mi menu, not from the word asher tovad. Bidach mi menu lo mashmale. He learns it out from the whole phrase asher tovad mi menu, not just from the word mi menu. So that's a bias position, which is that it's mashmaut or shim. That's simply a drasha difference between them. Rava says no, that there's a normative difference between them, which is Rava Amar pruta shuhuzla ikabeinayu. A pruta that depreciated is between them. Obviously, the pruta is not depreciating, it's the object that is depreciating in value. Mandamar masher tovad ika. At the time it was lost, it was worth a pruta. Mandamar umitzata leka. Because when it was found, it was worth less than a pruta. Mandamar masher tovad habi'ina umitzata. Wait, come on. Even according to one who says that it was lost, he still needs it to be found. Veleka. And that's not there. That doesn't make sense. Even if you believe at the time that it was lost, that it wasn't worth a pruta, but he still has to have umitzata. Someone has to find it. I mean that he still needs both aspects of it, and therefore, it has to be a pruta all along. Ella, pruta shukra yikabinayu. It's a case where it was worth less than a pruta when he lost it, but when he finds it, it's worth more than a pruta. Mandamar umitzata ika. When he found it, it was worth more than a pruta. Umandamar shetovad leka, because when it was lost, it was less than a pruta. And the Gemara asks the same question in reverse, which is, umandamar umitzata. Even according to the one who says umitzata, he still needs it to be lost in order to be found. And therefore, there's a connection between these two items, and there's a vav that is mechaber them, and therefore, both of them require a pruta. So the Gemara says, Ela, pruta shuhukra, v'uzla v'chazra v'hukra. It's a case where it was worth a pruta when he lost it, it depreciated, and then when it was found, it was back at the level of pruta. Ika benayot. That's the normative difference between these two positions. Manda marsha tovad ika. According to one who says that when it was lost, it was worth a pruta, then you have that. Manda amar umitzata, b'inan de'it bashir mitziah, mishat aveda v'ashat mitziah. So the nafkamina, according to Rava, between them is, how long does it have to be a pruta? Both of them agree that when it was lost, it has to be worth a pruta, and when it's found, it has to be worth a pruta. The only question is, in the interim, does it also have to be worth a pruta all the way along? According to the one who learns it out of Shir Tovad, it's just those two discrete points. At the time of loss and the time of finding, that's when you need to be worth a pruta. According to one who says umitzata, he thinks that the whole process has to have a shavet pruta. That means from the time it was lost to the time it's found, it's worth a shavet pruta. So that'll be a small difference between them, which is this halachic difference. If there was a depreciation between the time of the losing of the object to the time of the finding of the object that drops it below a pruta during that period of time, that would be a nafkamina between them. All right, now the Gemara asks the question that's begging, which we were trying to answer before from the fact that Sem may be coming for Simanim, which is Ibailuhu, Simanim Doraita, O Dirabanan. Are Simanim in a Torah, or are Simanim only rabbinic in nature? My nafkamina. My ask, what's the difference? Meaning that if Simanim work, why does it matter whether they come from the Torah, or whether they are Dirabanan? The Gemara says, La dure get, isha b'simanim. The answer is, when it comes to a get, do you have to return it b'simanim? Iamart Deoraita mihadrinan. If you say it's min a Torah, then this law would be applicable even by Gitin. It wouldn't just be applicable to Avedot, it would be applicable to any object that is lost. As Rashi mentions over here, it's a case where the Shliach's taking the get, and he loses the get on the way there, and then he finds it again. When he gets it back through the process of identifying it through Simanim, is that sufficient grounds to maintain that this is really the get that he brought with him? Do we know that this really is the same get? If you say there it's Doraita, of course. Bi'amar Derabanan. If you say it's only rabbinic in nature, Ki avud Rabbanan takanta b'mamona. When they put their takana in place, they only put it in place by monetary matters. Aval b'isura lo avid rabbanon takanta. When it comes to isur, the rabbanon didn't put in place a takana. Now that could be for two reasons. One is that the takana is only relevant by aveda, it's not really relevant by a get. Or it might be for practical reasons, which is, it's only possible to create the takana by aveda, not by a get. And that's because what Rashi says over here, b'monas hefker beit din hefker, that beit din has the ability to intervene in monetary matters because they have the right to disown you from your property. So even if it's the wrong owner, quote unquote, if they allow simanim to be used, they can create changes of ownership irrespective of what the Torah says because they can disown you from your property. When it comes to a get, they can't do that. When you're talking about whether the woman's married midoraita or she's not married midoraita, through a takana derabanan, we're not going to change that fact. Now the truth is we do change that fact, and the Gemara does in Gittin discuss those times, but we use that sparingly. This isn't something that we wave around with the flag, which is the idea that beitin be okir kiddushin mi'ikara, that they have the ability to ruin the kiddushin, the mafreya, and they take away the marriage from its start or inception, that we use sparingly and only in cases that really deal with gittin, not things like this, where the chachamim are going to put a bradin in place to have any time there's a siman that they, you know, a lost get, that they're going to make it, that they can undo the suin from its beginning, or the kiddushin from its beginning. That's something that's a really powerful and dangerous tool that we're going to use in sparing situations. So Rashi calls it a practical issue. Hefker beit din hefker only works by mamon. You could say that it's also from the reason behind the takana, which we'll see later. Maybe that's only true by avedot. It's not true by isurim. Tashma. Afa simlai ta bichlal koledu. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah seems to indicate that the din of siman was learnt out of the word simla, which would make it that simanim are deoraita. Seems pretty obvious from the Mishnah that simanim are deoraita, and that's what the Gemara brings here. Just like a simla has these two qualities to it, that it both has simanim, some identifying trait to it, plus has a claimant to it, and you have to announce about it. So the Gemara says, no, maybe no proof from our Mishnah. Tano tovim, it's trichale. The only thing you learn out of simla is tovim, that has to have a claimant. Simanim, kdei naspa. Synonym were brought down as an adjunct to that din, but not that it's doraita. It's true that simanim work, but they maybe only work the rabbanan. But they brought it together with the other item and say that it's a smach min haTorah, but that's not the real limud. So it's an interesting way to read the Mishnah. The Mishnah seems to write it as if it's doraita. Clearly, here the Gemara rejects that and says possibly the Mishnah is saying that it's only the rabbanan, but it's brought down as secondary to the main thing that we learn out of simla, which is the fact that it has to have a claimant. Tashma, chamor b'simanei ukaf. Didn't we say before that the chamor can be identified through the simanim of the saddle or of the blanket that goes on it? Ema b'edei ukaf. No, you just write edei ukaf, and that's what I mentioned to you before. The Gemara was being purposely ambiguous, which is that it was using both edim and simanim to say that you could figure it out. Either way, if you think simanim doraita, then it's simanim. If you think simanim are derabanan, then it's edim. That's what the Gemara does here as well. Don't say that it's simanei ukaf, say that it's edei ukaf. You can get around that problem. Tashma, v'ya imcha ad rosh achicha uto. The object will be with you, the aveda will be with you, until your friend comes to claim it. V'chita le'adatcha, shidnenu lo kodem shidrishenu. What do you think? How are you going to give it back to him before he comes to claim it? Meaning that it's so obvious that you have to hold on to it until he comes to claim it. Why does the Torah have to tell you that he should come to claim it? Elo darsheyu im ramayhu o eno ramay. You should check him out to see whether he is a thief, whether he is a trickster, a swindler of sorts. And how do you do that? My love, b'simanim. How do you check him out? You check his, he has simanim. The rest is low. B'edim. So now the question here of what edim means. Edim can come in two forms here, right? You could figure that out. Edim could either mean that you need edim to identify the object, or you need edim to tell you that the guy is not a ramai. Meaning that you need one of those two. It's not clear from the Gemara what the edim are doing over here. And you can see that in Rashi, this says b'edim. Shiavi edim shehu shelo. You should bring edim that it's his. So Rashi is using edim in place of simanim, that the edim are identifying the object. On the other hand, you can look in the Balamor. Hikshel perusho the tamalomri simla o perushu shiavi edim sheinu ramai. That you have to bring edim to identify that the guy is not a ramai, and therefore you can believe him when he says that this is his object. So you have two ways to read the Gemara about the edim here. What does edim mean? That we have to clear up that he's not a ramai, and that's how we know he's not a ramai, not through simanim. We can have outside verification that he's not a ramai. Or is the edim coming here to replace the simanim and saying that's how you get to the object, because the edim are testifying that this is your object. If you look at the Gemara coming up on Chofchet Amud Bet, which says Mishirabu Arimaim, over there it says, Hitkinu sheomim lo tseva ve'edim delav ramayat v'tol. The Gemara itself is going to say that, which is actually supportive, possibly, of what the Balamor is saying over here, that the Edim were coming to make sure that the person was not an Aramai. Or you could argue maybe that's like Rashi, because it's saying Mishra Abu Aramayim. That was a later institution, that's not the original institution. That's number one. And number two is that over here on Chavchet Amud Aleph, says that with regards to the Gemara, it says, Simanim ve'edim, inatel bala edim. Tomorrow's daf, maybe we'll get it to later today, that if you have one person comes with simanim and one person comes with edim, you give it to the person with the edim, that the edim trump. So now, what are the edim telling you over there? That sounds like the edim are telling you the same thing as the simanim, meaning that they're not telling you that the guy's not a ramai, they're telling you that what the object is or who the object belongs to. So you have the Gemara on Chavchet, both on Aleph and Bet, have used edim in both of these functions. One time they use it like Rashi, which is Edim are Simanim, that they're identifying the object, and one time he uses Edim to tell you that the Ramai is not a Ramai. So you see both interpretations by the Gemara, which makes it possible to interpret it here also, that the Edim mean both things. Alright, Tashma. That when you try to identify somebody who's passed away, and you're trying to come back to the woman and say that her husband passed away, you can only identify the individual if you can see the facial features with the nose. That's despite the fact that you have certain simanim in the individual or on his utensils. From this, it would sound like simanim don't work, because we are requiring you to have facial identity with the nose, and simanim don't suffice to tell us that this is the individual. Amrei, where says no. Gufa, daruch v'gutz. I mean, the type of simanim that we're talking about here are so generic that they're not meaningful. He was tall. He was short. Okay, there are a lot of people who are tall, there are a lot of people who are short. That doesn't mean you've identified the person. Kelav, the chashin and the she'la. With the kelav, we worry about borrowing. How do you know that the person carrying the object is really the owner of the object? He might have lent the object to another party. This is a big issue. I'll come back and speak about this in a second. I chashin and the she'la, if you think that you worry about borrowing, chamor b'simanei ukaf, Heichem Hadrinan. How do you return a donkey with its saddle? Maybe he lent the saddle to someone else. So Amre Ukaf Loshule Inche. People don't lend out the saddle or the cover for the donkey. Ukfa Mishom Demaskav Lechamra. Because of the fact that the saddle will cause a wound or injure the animal. So that they are uniquely shaped to that particular animal. And if you put on it a different animal, it actually causes an injury to the other animal. So people don't borrow them or they don't lend them out, because of the fact that it will affect the animal. Ibai dema, kelav, bichivari visumke. Kelav, the same way that we saw by a person, they were generic, tall and short. They said, oh, his clothing was white or it was colored. All right, so that's not an identifying, it's too generic to be an identifying trait. Elaha, detanya, what are you going to do with this? Mitzao kashro bikis, ober anarchy, ubitabat. So if you find the get, and if you find it, the shliach who took the get finds it, and they find it attached to his kis, in his money pouch, uba arnaki on his wallet, uba tabat, or with his ring, oshimatzo ben kelav, or he found it amongst his other possessions, afilu zman rubet, even after a long period of time, kasher. It is kasher. We worry about it. After a certain amount of time has elapsed, we assume that someone else lost it or came from someone else. Over here, because there's another identifying feature along with it, then the person knows for sure this is the same get. Either because it's amongst his possessions, which means it never left his possession, or there's a specific item that is identifiable as his that's together with it. Again, if you worry about lending it out, just because it's attached to his, I'll call it a pocket, or we'll call it his money pouch, how do you know that's his? Maybe he lent his money pouch to someone else. Amrei, kis v'arnaki v'tabat lo mashili inshe. People will not lend out these three items. Their money pouch, their wallet, and tabat, their ring, but here it's really a signet, a ring that has an insignia in it that they use to stamp with. Kisva arnaki mishum de misamne. Kisva arnaki because people see it as being bad luck. As Rashi says over here, misamne, menachashe v'omer. People are menachesh. They're superstitious. Siman adam shemashil kiso shemocher lo mazalo. If you give the person your kis, your pouch, your money pouch, or something that's very particular to you about money, it's as if you're selling him your mazel. It's as if you're giving him your mazel. So people see that as being something that is dangerous or something inauspicious, so they don't want to get involved in it. It's interesting, Tosfot asked the question, Vim Tomar, what about the issue of Vim Tomar Aktiv Lo Tinachashu? Isn't there a restriction in the Torah from being superstitious? You say, Ish Lomar, Bishili Bamei Isham, Rinan Kol Devar Sheish Bo Mishum Rufua, Ein Bo Mishum Darchei Amori. And then as the refuah is not of derech emuni. I'm not sure how that answers this question. This is not necessarily derech refuah. But the Gemara, I'm not sure why Tosafot doesn't bring this, but the Gemara brings this issue in two other places. One of them is the story of Rabbi Kiva's daughter on the night of her marriage, and that there was a person that told him that his daughter was going to die before she got married. And then the daughter wakes up in the middle of the night, gives money to a knee, and she has to take the pin out of her hair, and she sticks it in the wall, kills the nachash. And also the story of Rabba and Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef refuses to become the Rosh Yeshiva, even though he's supposed to go first, because he has information from a Kaldai that says that once he becomes the Rosh, he's only going to live for 2 years. The Gemara just takes it for granted, but the question is, why were they menachish? Why do they worry about these superstitions? Why do they worry? So what the Rishonim say, and I think that might be what Tosfot is saying over here, is that even though you're not supposed to be superstitious, but you should worry about these things. These things are things that you should consider. Take it into consideration. So even though Rav Yosef didn't necessarily believe that that was the case, but he was said it's worth taking precaution for what he said. And so that's maybe the same thing over here. It's worth to take precaution over here not to do this, because some people say that it's a bad luck. Not that we believe or we are superstitious in this nature, but maybe you want to take precaution with regards to these manners. Betabat mishum demizayif. And people don't lend out their rings with an insignia in it, because then it can be forged. And then they could seal and use your seal to then send documents or certain things in your name, which you don't want. So people don't lend these items out. Now, why this became important is in the World Trade Center, in terms of identifying people who passed away in the World Trade Center. We spoke about this in Yevamot, about dealing with these issues or what they exactly are, the qualifications. But one of the issues that comes up is this idea of clothing. Because they did find certain things like wallets or remnants of clothing that belonged to these individuals, but not the individuals themselves. Then can you then declare the person to have passed away when you find their clothing? So the Gemara here says that people lend out their clothing. You have to worry about she'elah. If they lend out the clothing, how do you know it was that person? Maybe they lent it to someone else. So most of the poskim and what they say, and that's what I said, all this has to do with cultural norms. And what happens in society is that people, especially in business attire, they don't lend out their suits or their suit pants to other people. They don't lend or give their wallets to other people. So there are certain things that today, in a cultural setting, we wouldn't lend to other people. And therefore, they become simanim for the individual. And if you find remnants of their clothing in that situation, that's a good enough identifying factor to say that the person passed away there, because nobody else is going to be wearing their suit pants. If we find their suit pants, and they most likely were there, then they were the person who passed away, and it wasn't lent to one of their co-workers to wear, because you don't lend your suit pants to your co-workers. Anyway, so that's important, meaning that the Gemara here discusses that in their society, what wasn't lent to other people. But there are things in our society that are also not lent to other people. Gemara says, Lema kitena e. Let us suggest here that this is a machloket tanaim as to whether simanim are deraita or not. Emi edim al shuma. You're not allowed to give testimony to a, we'll call it loosely, a birthmark. This is a feature on a person, which is a permanent but physical feature that they have. Rashi calls it a varoa, which usually means some sort of, means like a red splotch, but it also means a birthmark of sorts. Ve'elazar ben Mahavayo mer mi'idim ala shuma, that you can testify about it. Ma'la v'hakam iflegeh. This is their machloket. The Tanakam asavra simanim derabanan. The Tanakam believes simanim derabanan, and therefore shuma is not a way to identify a person, because this is something that could be on this person, but another person can have the same varoa, can have the same mark. And therefore, this is enough. This is not a siman muvhak, but it's a good siman. And therefore, how strong a siman it is, it's, if it was doraita, then it would have been good enough. If it's not doraita, then it wouldn't have been good enough. Amarava, dekuliyama simanim doraita. No, you could believe that everybody believes that simanim are doraita. V'hacha, b'shuma, mitzuya, b'ben gilo, kamiflege. They're arguing about whether someone who is, as Rashi says over here, Ben Gilo, Hanolad Bishato, that was born at the same time as him, Shnoldu b'mazel echad, that they are born under the same mazel, which means the Gemara thinks here, just like their mazel, quote unquote, is similar, so too will be certain character traits about these individuals will be similar. And so Rashi calls it Ben Gilo over here, is someone born on the same mazel. I note over here that you should look in the Rashi in the Dorim. Also, the Gemara there talks about Ben Gilo with regards to visiting a sick person. Over there, it says there that you visit a sick person even if you're Ben Gilo. Because there, the Gemara talks about the fact that if you're Ben Gilo, that some of the sickness or the weakness can be passed to you. So So over there also, the Ran in the Dorim says that Ben Gilo means someone under the same mazal. Rashi over there says Ben Gilo means someone of his same age. So you could also hear that this is a feature that happens to people who age. I mean that there's certain traits or markings on people that come with age, not just with being born under the same mazal. So that could also be an explanation over here. Mar Savar Shuma Mitsuya Ben Gilo, that's the Tanakama, believes that this is not unique enough because too many people, anybody born on that day is going to have the same marking, or anybody that age is going to have the same marking. Mar Savar Shuma Mitsuya Ben Gilo. No, these are types of unique things that are enough to be a siman. Ibai Dema. Dukuliyama shuma ina mitsuya beben gilo. Everybody agrees that a shuma is not found in other people. They're arguing about whether certain simanim change after death. Now over here, it doesn't mean that the siman is going to go away, but what they're talking about is coloration. That the coloration of this siman will change after death. Say it's white before, and then it's black afterwards, or it's white before, it's red afterwards. Whatever it is, that death causes a change, and therefore it can't be an identifying feature because the feature changes. So Mar Savar Simanim Asurim Lishtanot Achar Mita. The Tanakama believes they change, and therefore it's not a good enough identifying feature. Mar Savar Velazar Ben Mahavai thinks that it doesn't change, and therefore in Asurim Lishtanot Achar Mita, it's a good siman. Ibai Dema, you could say Kuliyama Shuma in Asurim Lishtanot Achar Mita V'Simanim Derabanan. So now going the opposite direction, you could say that everybody thinks Simanim Derabanan, and Simanim don't change after death. They're arguing about how good a siman is shuma. Marsava shuma siman muvhaku. This is what I said to you before, and this is corroborated by the Gemara here, that even if you believe simanim are derabanan, if it's a siman muvhak, then it works even d'oraita. Even if you believe that simanim don't work d'oraita, that's generic simanim. But if you have a trait that is so particular and so unique to the individual called a siman muvhak. So again, we said the whole next to the letter in the get, that works do-raita according to everyone. And that's why, shuma siman muvhaku, that would be Elazar ben Davai. The Masava shuma lav siman muvhaku, which would be the Tanakama, who says that you can't use this because it's a generic siman. Amarova, imtim solomar simanim lav do-raita. If you believe that simanim are not do-raita, heichim hadrinan avedita b'simanim. How do we get back an aveda with simanim? Now, obviously, what Rashi says, oh, hefker beit din hefker. That's how it works. Meaning that, Beit Din decided that we're going to allow simanim to be used, and therefore hefker Beit Din hefker, they disown you from the property, and that's how we give it back. But what Rova is really asking is, what is the logic behind the fact that people are okay with this, or people want this takana in place? Now we want a takana that's going to help the person who lost the object. So now, why would you put this takana in place if it helps one party, but it's to the deficit of another party? And so he's looking for the logic behind the takana. And again, I said to you before that maybe the logic behind the takana might also make it only relevant by Aveda, not by the cases of Gitin as well. Maybe it's not as relevant there. And we'll see this here. So he says, the nechle the motze Aveda, that the person who finds an Aveda would like this, the nahader b'simanim, that he will return a b'simanim, keichet dechi abdalei l'didei, namin hajalei b'simanim. It's a social contract, which is a quid pro quo. I'm going to give it back here to someone with simanim, so that in the future, I will also get my objects back through simanim. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rav Safra, the Rava, chiyadam oset tova latzmo, b'mamon sheino shelo." Over here, you're telling that the person is doing a favor for his own benefit. This is the motze, the finder of the object. So the finder of the object is willing to return it with simanim in order that he will benefit in the future from other people giving him back something. That's not to the interest of the loser of the aveda. That's to the interest of the finder of the aveda. This is not a takana to the benefit of the aveda. You're basically using someone else's money to benefit this person. That doesn't work. Ella, you have to phrase it this way. Nechel le bal aveda, the mehev simanim le mishkalei. The person who loses the object wants to be able to give simanim to recover his object. Mida yoda de edim leitle. He knows that he doesn't have edim to the fact that this is his object. Nobody else knows the simanim mufakim that I know over here. And therefore, I like this mechanism of simanim because therefore I can get it back through this simanim. So now, here there's not the quid pro quo, but rather, the person who lost it says, look, I don't have edim. The best way for me to get it back is because I know something about this object that other people don't know about the object. And therefore, he's willing to have the object returned because of that. So that's what the takana. The takana is that it's to the benefit of the loser of the aveda, because it's something that he thinks he can control, something that he has information that others don't have, but he also knows he doesn't have edim. And so this is a way for him to get his object back, even though he doesn't have edim to the fact that it is his object. And therefore, it's to his benefit. Now, whether this built on top of what Rava said before, it's very possible that it's built on top of what Rava said before, which is that there's still a quid pro quo here, which is that everybody wants this to happen. I mean, that there is still a social contract. Don't have to say that, but that's one possibility. The second thing over here is, which I mentioned to you before, the Gemara is using the term siman muvhak over here. The guy says, I have simanim muvhakim that other people don't have. If he has simanim muvhakim, then those are simanim d'oraita. So Tosfot over here says, lo muvhakim mamash kamar. That's lav dafka muvhakim. Ela muvhakim is simanei chaveiro. They're better than what other people have. Doesn't mean that these are muvhakim objectively, therefore they're good d'oraita. No, these are muvhakim. They're better simanim than anybody else has. Since they're better simanim than anybody else has, therefore I'm going to use them. So Tosfot over here already says that the word muvhak is not always used in the Gemara to mean muvhak in the sense that it's a siman d'oraita, and that's what he notes over here. Number two is, which is very interesting, Rava just gave the reason behind Aveda. This is Rava here on Daf Chof Zayin Amud Bet. If you look back on Daf Yud Bet Omen Aleph, Rava also gives the reason why Ani'im want their kids, when they're working in a field, to follow after them and pick up the leket that falls from them, or the leket shechcha that is behind them. So Gemara wanted to understand, how is it? Why can they have their young kids follow behind them? Does a katan have zchia? Why does this work? Why are they allowed to do this? Rava, in the end, said something very interesting. Rava, back on Daf Yud Bet, gave the reason why the Aniyim want this. It was for the exact same reason that he says over here. Elam Rava, asu sheino zocheh kizocheh. They make someone who is not rightfully entitled to keep it to someone who is entitled to keep it. Afo pi shein lekatan zchia, even though the katan has no zchia, b'makom acher kanasua kizocheh. Here they gave him the right to acquire things. My taima, why? Aniyim gufayu nechelhu. The Aniyim themselves are very happy about this. It's already on to Yud Bet Amud Bet. It starts in Yud Bet Amav, so it's on that. Ki heiche dechei agru lididhu, nilkot banayu, batrayu. Just like this Ani, when he's going, he can have his kids follow behind him. The other Aniyim say, listen, when I get hired, I can have my kids follow behind me. Again, there's this quid pro quo. People are willing to accept or give up their ownership in an object or their entitlement to an object so that they get that benefit in the future. The Aniyim here are willing to give up, quote unquote, their rights and allow this katan to take it, because he's falling behind his dad who's working in the field, because they know in the future that they might be hired, and they'll have their kids follow behind them, and therefore it's a worthwhile social contract between peoples. That's what Rava suggests over here, the same thing with regards to Aveda. I mean, that there is a social benefit, or a benefit to society at large, to have people able to return things with simanim, because I know if I lose it, and you lose it, then we all want this to work, because I'm not always going to be the one on the finding side, I'm also going to be on the losing side sometimes, and therefore I want this idea of simanim to work. And so it's interesting, Rava uses the same logic over here as he uses over there. And the way Rava phrases it over there, he says they make the enu zocheh kizocheh, that they change someone who doesn't have a right of schiyah to somebody who has a right of schiyah. And it's the same thing over here. We're going to disown someone midoraita from an object in order to have this social contract that works. This idea maybe of hefker baked in hefker is functioning based on this takana, but the takana revolves around a societal benefit that comes from doing this. And that's what the Gemara says before, meaning that you need a reason to have a takana. That takana might only be applicable by Aveda, not by Gitin. Now, by Aveda, you can say, in generically more, that an Aveda, people say, look, I'm going to lose an Aveda, you lose an Aveda, we all want things to return with Simanim. A Get has much more significant implications besides the fact that he lost it and he wants to recover it, but as a implications of Isurim and Eshet Ish, over there, I'm not sure that you would argue that the societal benefit exists over there, that the Chachamim would be mitakein in that case. And that might be what the Gemara said before when it says, oh, for Aveda, they were mitakein, they weren't mitakein for Isur. That might have to do with what Rava is suggesting down here, that the Takana is not as relevant to Gitin as it is to Aveda. You could argue against that and say, just, it's like any other Aveda. If Aveda works with Simani, we want it to work for Get as well. But the implications by Get might be different enough that the Takana or the social benefit does not exist in that case. All right, now the Gemara says, what are you going to do with this Mishnah? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, echad olove mishlosha, yachzir lolove. We find a bundle of contracts in which it's one person borrowed from three different lenders. Then who do you give it back to? You give it back to the lolove. Shlosha shel lavu min echad. If you have three contracts that have three different borrowers, but one lender, yachzir lamalve. You return it to the lender. So nechile lolove, lajurle lamalve. Since when is the loveh benefit from the fact that you're giving it back to the malveh? In that case, the loveh will be, I don't want you to give it back. It's not to my benefit that you give it back. Amalai hotam svaruhu. Over there, it's purely logical. Echad loveh mishlosha yachzir loveh. If one borrowed from three different people, you give it back to loveh. The gabe loveh shchiche. Gabe malveh lo shchiche. It makes sense that it was with the loveh because you have one borrower from three different lenders. Why is it together? The only reason it would be together is because the loveh was in possession of it. Shmamina mi loveh naful. So there you see that it fell from the loveh's hands. Shlosha shelavu meechad. If you have three different debtors that are borrowing from a single lender, yachzor the malveh, the gabi malveh shchicha. It makes sense they were together because it was with the lender. Gabi loveh lo shchicha. It doesn't make sense that it would be in the possession of the loveh. So the Gemara says there it has nothing to do with the quid pro quo. There it's just simply a matter of logic that the person who would have been in possession of it is the one who would have bundled these contracts together. And that'll either be the lender or the borrower, depending on which the three contracts have the same individual in. El hadetznan. What are you going to do with this? Our Mishnah. Matzat tachrich shel shtarot. O aguda shel shtarot. The Gemara talked about these are really bundles of shtarot, whether there was a kesher around them, whether they were rolled in a certain way, put together in a certain way. Or is a yachzir, you give them back. Wait, oh, it's so good for the loveh to give it back to the malveh. What benefit does he have over there? Tosfot says, yeah, maybe. Because the borrower might one day become a lender. And therefore, he might want it to be that way. And Tosfot answers, interestingly enough, and he says, a person is more interested in the here and now than in the future. He basically says, right now I'm a debtor, and I have no interest in him giving it back. Oh, I might be a lender in the future, forget about that. The here and now is more important. I would have said that generally people who are borrowers don't turn out to be lenders, meaning that a person who is borrowing doesn't often become the lender. I mean, sometimes it happens, but usually people find themselves on the same side of the situation over and over again, which is that the borrower is borrowing and the lender is lending. And so therefore, I don't know if a person would look at this as a quid pro quo, which is, oh, I'm the borrower now, it'll be my advantage when I'm a lender later on. So I think maybe you could have answered in that way. Halama Rava simanim deoraita. Rava says, then, I don't have a reason for this takanat chachamim. Must be that simanim deoraita dichtiv, because it says, v'yayimcha adrosh achicha oto. And he brings the pasuk that we brought before. You have to check him out. It must be done with simanim. So now, Amar Rava, imtim salom are simanim doraita. What do you mean? If you say simanim are doraita, didn't Rava just say that simanim are doraita and he brought you a pasuk to prove that? What's the answer? The Gemara already told you what the rejection of that is. That it doesn't have to be simanim, it could be edim. So imtim salom are, hapashit le simanim doraita. He already concluded that simanim are doraita. You could answer like we answered before, which is, it meant edim and not simanim. So it's not definitive proof that it's simanim deoraita, but Rava believes that simanim are deoraita, and therefore he darshans the pasuk in that manner. But someone who disagreed with him could clearly be doresh the pasuk in a different manner. But now he's saying, if you believe that simanim are deoraita, then let's look at the cases. Simanim v'simanim. You have two people who show up. Each of them gives simanim. Yaneach achivo Eliyahu. There's no way to conclude who is the better claimant over here. Simanim ve'edim. This is what I quoted to you before. If you have one guy bringing simanim and one guy bringing edim, inyatein the bala edim. Then you give it to the person who brought the edim because edim always trump. They're better evidence in all cases rather than the person themselves or the simanim themselves. Simanim ve'simanim ve'edachat. Both parties have a siman, but one of them also has an edachat. Eid echad kemandalet de dami. The eid echad is non-existent. V'yaniach. And he should leave it. Meaning that over here, eid echad is not relevant to this case. Because eid echad is relevant when you're talking about a shvu'ah. And when you're talking about the beginning of a party when there's a claim against them that they would force them to a point of a shvu'ah. Over here, the eid echad has no meaning. And therefore, the case is really of siman versus siman. And the eid echad is irrelevant. With two edim, it changes the dynamic because two edim carry weight halachically versus an eid echad, which carries no weight in terms of what you're saying here, the beirur, the clarification of the case over here. The eid echad doesn't tell us anything. He just obligates the other party to respond. Two edim can be koveya what the situation is, or they can be mevarer the situation. Eide ariga ve'eide nefila. One of them brings edim that the beged was woven for him. The other ones bring edim that it fell from this individual. That seems obvious that you give it to the one, the edim, that say it fell from him, because just because it was woven from him doesn't mean that he didn't sell it or he didn't give it to someone else. He sold it in the interim and it fell from someone else. The same problem we have with money. Just because your name's on the money doesn't mean that it's still with you. You used it as tender and therefore someone else might have it now. If he knows length and width, you give it to the one who knows the length. Meaning that the person who tells you the length, it's giving you more information than the person is telling you the width. Demidat rachbo shuri kamisharila kan mechasila mara v'kai. A person can estimate or can figure out the width of an individual when he's wearing it. Midat arko lo mishtarla. When it comes to the length of the beged, it's not as easy to figure it out. That's what Rashi says over here. Imra auta biyera balim shiarak shayabala mechusepa imtaliti. You can tell from the way it's wrapped around him what the width of the object is or the width of it. The length of it you can't tell because people roll it up or they fold it up, and so you really can't tell the length of the beged. But the width is something that you could identify. Midat rako midat rachbo or midat gemav. If he gives the length and the width, gemav is ge'im yavanit, assuming you mean chaf shalanu. In different places in Shas, the Rishonim have different interpretations of what this gimel yavanit is. Hachikari orach v'rochav yachad gemav. If you give midat orko, midat rachbo, or midat gemav, you take the midat orko v'rachbo. And he gives it to the person who identifies separately the length and width. One person is identifying if you the length and width together as a single number, and one is identifying you separately the length and width. So then the person giving you the separate numbers obviously has better information or is giving you better information. Midat orko, midat rachbo. Person gives you length and width. Umidat mishkolotav, or someone's giving you the weight. Inatein the midat mishkolotav. Then you give it to the person who gave you the weight. If you go back to Chav Gimel Amud Bet, the top Tosfot over there asked about the Gemara. Didn't the Gemara over there say that if mishkal works, if weight works, then kal v'chomer l'midah, then it certainly should work by midah minyan. Tosfot says, what type of kal v'chomer is that? Look over here. The Gemara says here that weight is better than length and width. So Tosfot over there answered that there's a difference. That's only in this particular case. If I tell you that I know the length and width of your shirt or length and width of your pants, another guy tells you I know the weight of your pants or the weight of your shirt, in terms of clothing, that is a piece of information you should not know. And if you know that information, it's clear that you're the owner of that item because it's too specific. That doesn't mean generically weight trumps length and width. It's just in the particular to begadim, it's a piece of information that is far too particular that the person must be the owner of the item, and the better information that you're giving, the more likely you are the owner of this item. Hu omer simanei haget, v'hi omeret simanei haget, inyatein la. If they both, the husband or the ex-husband now, and the wife or the ex-wife, are giving simanim to the get, then you give it to her. The seemingly, the reason that you give it to her is because she would only know the simanim if she got into her hands. And therefore, it must be that if she's giving the simanim, that she was already in possession of the get. But my, what was the case here? What simanim are we talking about? Ilema b'midat orko v'rachbo. If it's the length and width of the document, dilma hadid anakit lechazite. That's something that she could have seen. He was carrying around a piece of paper. She goes, yeah, it's an 8.5 by 11. She saw the piece of paper on which the get was written, so she can estimate or guess what the parameters of the get are. Ela nekev yeshbo b'tzad ot ploni. That there's a hole next to this particular letter. That's already a siman muvhak. And then, of course, if she knows that type of information, that's like already siman d'oraita. Because remember, if simanim are only d'rabanan, then we don't include isurim, get would not be included. So she has to give you a siman that is a siman muvhak. And here a siman muvhak is, there's a hole by this oath. If she knows that information, that's so particular that she must have seen the get, that she must have had it in her possession. Hu omer simanei achut, v'hi omeret simanei achut. He gives the identifying character traits of the string or the tie that's around the get, and she does as well. Inatein la, give it to her. Bamai, again, what type of information is she providing? Ilema b'chivara v'sumka, white and colored. V'dilma hadin anokit le'chazite. Again, when he was carrying it around, she could have seen the string that was around it, and she would know what the string that was tying it up was. Ela b'midat orkom, with the length of it, the length of the string, not the length of the document, because that we already said that wasn't good enough, she could have seen it. She knows the length of the string. So now, she wouldn't have known the length of the string. She might have seen him carrying the document sealed with the tie on it, but she doesn't know how long that string is. If she knows the length of that string, that's really particular information. Hu omer b'chafisa, v'hi omeret b'chafisa. Meaning that they found it in this kli, in this utensil. She says it was found in this utensil, and he says it was found in this. Inatein lo. Then you give it to him. My daima. May the yod of the chomadit le b'chafisa hu d'manechle. She knows that that's his secret hiding place. So she could have guessed that that's where it was. That if he has a get, she can guess that he kept it in that special location. He has a specific location or a specific utensil where he always puts his items. If she identifies that, that's not information that's particular to the get. She could have guessed that about anything that he had that he wanted to store, he was going to put there. And therefore, it's not a defining enough character trait. That means that she really has knowledge of the get. It just means that she knows her husband or ex-husband now. It does not mean that she really knows anything about the get. And therefore, you would not return it to her. You would return it to him. Okay, we'll stop here on the top of Chav Chet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah.